Yeah. I used to have to pick up Popeye's chicken for Keyshawn.
One of the NFL's most respected analysts.
Morning, Keyshawn. How you doing? It's been a little while, but it's great to hear your voice. Nobody knows what's going on more than you do.
And one of the game's most charismatic stars ever.
Shut your ass up! Play football! Man, you a fake-ass John Randall. Shut your ass up!
ESPN's Keyshawn Johnson joins Dale and Keefe.
Cam Newton sucked!
Now on WEEI.
Joining us on the Harbor One Hotline is ESPN NFL analyst and former NFL wide receiver Keyshawn Johnson. Keyshawn is sponsored by Zuti. Build any apps your company needs in a week. Visit Zuti.com for details. And McFarland Energy. Check out McFarland's new customer oil delivery special at McFarland.com. You can hear Keyshawn every morning on ESPN Radio's new morning show, Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin, as well as on ESPN's new relaunched NFL Live program, which airs weeknights from 4 to 5 p.m. Good morning, Keyshawn. How are you?
Good, man. Cam Newton still sucks. See? Brady would have scored.
Now, I'm going to ask you this as an analyst, and then I want you to compare it as when you were a football player. Is there such a thing as a good loss? And was there such a thing as a good loss when you were a player?
As a player, no. As a analyst, a fan, somebody watches the game, yeah, that was a good loss, an encouraging loss. I saw a lot of great things, not just good things, but great things in that position that they put themselves in to win that game in the end.
What did you learn about the Patriots on Sunday night?
You go up against a really good Seattle team, and you fight in the end. Although the 12th man was not there, it still was a tough environment and a tough situation, traveling all the way across country. Given the fact that you hadn't been with your quarterback that long and you still were able to compete against a team that, quite frankly, has made a transition from a defensive dominant team to an offensive juggernaut with Russell Wilson, and you were right there in the end.
Preseason predictions about the Patriots were all over the place. Some people said 5-11, and others thought, 11-5, they'll be competing with the Chiefs. Have you changed your view at all about what this Patriots team can be this season based on the first 2 weeks?
No, not me. I wasn't one of those guys that said they were going to go 5-11. So whoever said that obviously don't watch football enough to really understand what the Patriots had and what they have and what their system is and how they're being coached to win games and play games. So whoever was saying those sort of things was just hating on the team, basically, and hating on Cam Newton at the quarterback spot.
Well, just to clarify, one of those was, I believe it was ESPN's Football Power Index. It was one of those computer simulations, so it wasn't even a person we can really critique.
Yeah, but somebody's still pushing the button.
Blame the geeks.
Yeah, I agree.
Keyshawn, you've been part of that locker room. You've been part of that football family. What is the effect on that family when a popular teammate, a captain, a guy that everybody loves, has a personal tragedy take place literally as he's getting to the stadium and hours before kickoff?
Well, what you try to do is you certainly understand, right? So there's no pressure to get on the field. You try to wrap your arms around him and give him the comfort and the love that he needs at that time. And you just try to console him as much as you can. Anytime somebody loses loved ones, it's always tough, especially, when he's a teammate or friend and I'm assuming players on the team and in the organization met the parents before. And so it becomes deeper to the core because of its family. I mean, it's family. I'm sure parents have come over for the games and cooked for players and things like that. Now, my mom was close to pretty much every team I've ever played on, like close to the coaches close to teammates where they would come over for dinner or she would cook food and I would take it to a facility for the players and the coaches to eat. So it becomes a little bit of a different story.
Now, Stephon Gilmore is the reigning defensive player of the year, and yet it seemed like on Sunday night the Seahawks had no problem going right at him. And obviously they have a great quarterback and a good second-year wide receiver. But for a guy, you know, Gilmore seems to be compared to, you know, Darrell Revis at times. And do you think that would still happen if it was Darrell Revis, you know, in his prime getting targeted?
Absolutely. Good coaches don't care about what people say about players. You attack players that are great. When I was playing for Bill Parcells and Todd Haley and those guys on the offensive side of the ball, we didn't care that Deion Sanders was over there. We didn't care that Rod Woodson was over there. We threw the ball at those guys. So I think that's the way you have to approach it. If you feel you have an alpha dog to be able to match them, then you go for it.
Keyshawn, we know that the quarterback for the Patriots, Cam Newton, is being paid like a backup and performing like a superstar through 2 weeks. This morning on the Greg Hill Show, he said, at this particular time in his career, money is not important to him. Do you believe him when he says that?
Absolutely. Because it'll come. He'll get the big deal. He'll lead this team to the playoffs, and they'll like what they've seen throughout the year, and they'll probably wind up extending him or having those conversations at some point in time. You look at what was available for him team-wise and money-wise when he made the decision to sign with New England. You know, it wasn't a whole lot out there, so he wasn't overstressing it. I think more of the public and more of the sports talk radio bobbleheads and people like that are more so concerned with how much money he's making, opposed to him concerned with it, and all he's trying to do is get back on track to be the best football player he could possibly be.
We're talking with NFL analyst and ESPN radio host Keyshawn Johnson, our regular Tuesday guest here on the Dale and Keefe program. You were considered a very big wide receiver. I mean, you were different physically than most of the guys who played that position. When you look at DK Metcalf, do you see a guy who looks different than guys who play that position?
Not really. I mean, there's some big dudes. Julio Jones and Michael Thomas are big guys. I mean, you know, guys like that are huge. Devontae Adams is not actually small. He's not, you know, huge. But DK Metcalf would probably be on the bigger side, I would say. Keenan Allen is not a small wide receiver. Neither is Mike Evans or Mike Williams. I mean, those are all big guys. N'Keal Harry is not small by no stretch of imagination. So I think what happened when I came into the league, there were not a lot of guys that were 6'4", 220, that can run, can play the slot, can play outside, inside, can do pretty much a whole lot of different things. And then for me, they went out and they got, you know, Eric Moles or Randy Moss. They started to get bigger after I came into the league. But, you know, Michael Irvin wasn't a small receiver. Michael Irvin wasn't small at all. There were bigger guys. There were bigger guys that came before me. They just didn't do all of the things that I could do. I could play inside. I could play outside. I didn't come off the field. You know, when you get in the sub packages, which is like third down, the things that Julian Edelman can do, I can do, and all they do is slide me inside. We didn't have a traditional slot receiver, so to speak. They want to get the ball to me, they move me inside. They want to get it to me on the outside, they get it to me on the outside. So what you're seeing now is there's like the specialty, whether it's Renfro with the Raiders or whether it's Julian Edelman with the Pats or you know, some of those guys that Cole Beasley, you see some of those guys that they move into the inside. The interesting thing about DK Metcalf is that he's big and he's fast and he's a vertical ball guy that can really run and separate. He doesn't have a whole lot of wiggle. His route tree is still trying to be fine-tuned, but he's such a good athlete that he becomes like a physical specimen out there and it's hard to deal with that.
Who do you think's better right now, Keyshawn, Tom Brady or Drew Brees?
I think they're both about the same. I mean, Drew Brees missed Michael Thomas last night, and if you watch the game, you can kind of tell, at least I can with my eyes, tell that a few throws got away from him, but not because of him, but because of the receivers. The interception was placed solely on Drew, but a lot of those balls that were, you know, kind of thrown off target, the receivers were slowing down, they were stopping, they weren't continuing to go to the spot that he thought they should be at, where Michael Thomas, you know, would be in a spot where they thought he would be when they delivered the football. Tom Brady got on track to a degree the second game because, again, Mike Evans and him wasn't on the page the first time around. Tom Brady was throwing a ball from the left side of the hash all the way across the field. They got intercepted for a pick six. But the first thing, because of their age, the first thing people want to say is that they're losing their fastball. Doesn't look like they lost their fastball to me.
A week ago, N'Keal Harry fumbled on the goal line, and Cam Newton supported him, said that wasn't his whole game. He did a lot of good things. This week, you have Julian Edelman failing to, you know, haul in a catch at the goal line that would have won the game for the Patriots. And today, Cam Newton says, it was a little high. I could have placed it better. It was a fastball. As a receiver, how much value or how much does it mean to you when your quarterback is so supportive and publicly defends you guys?
Well, he's not lying, right? I mean, and I think I was on the show with you guys, and we talked about N'Keal Harry's fumble out the back of the end zone last week. It happens, right? It's just something that happens. And Julian Edelman, you know, that ball's coming in hot, and Julian Edelman tries to make the catch. It gets away from him. It's not necessarily anybody's fault. It just happens that way. But to answer your question about a quarterback protecting you, I mean, really, that's what is the truth. I mean, he's not out there lying. The one thing that I've hated in quarterbacks is for them to act like they don't have any wrong. They've never done anything wrong. I remember when I played with Drew Bledsoe, the former New England Patriot quarterback with the Dallas Cowboys, and Drew Bledsoe, he threw an interception or something, and he tried to make it seem as though it was part of my fault, and then I had to just kind of really go in on him on the sideline to a whole degree where, you know, he'll never do that again. So you don't ever want to have to get into those type of confrontations. Just, you know, tell the truth. You know, don't sit up and try and make it seem like it's somebody else's fault. And I think Cam Newton being a captain of the team and owning everything on his own, that's what winners do. That's what winners do. Tom Brady never threw anybody under the bus. And so when you think about it, Cam Newton is doing what Cam Newton has always done.
And maybe you kind of already answered part of the question, Keyshawn, but in your career, who was your favorite quarterback to play with and your least favorite quarterback that you played with?
My favorite quarterback to play with was a combination of Vinny Testaverde and Brad Johnson. They just knew what they knew the deal. They knew what to do, how to do it, veteran guys. And my least favorite, I don't necessarily know if I have a least favorite. I mean, if you look at the list of quarterbacks that I've had, I mean, I enjoyed all of them, even Tom Tupa, who was actually a punter. Me and Tupa connected against the New England Patriots for about 150 yards one game. And so, you know, I kind of enjoyed everybody to a degree. It was not anybody that was the least favorite, I would say. I understood who I was dealing with, you know. Like, I understood who Neil O'Donnell was. I understood who Rick Meyer was, that Rick Meyer had limitations, or Ray Lucas. I understood that Ray Lucas was a phenomenal athletic quarterback that needed some seasoning to become something even better. You know, like, I understood Rob Johnson. I understood Bledsoe and I understood Drew Henson. So it's kind of like, I played with so many, like, I understood Jake Delhomme. Like, I understood Jake Delhomme was a guy that it was never his fault. I got it. I understood that. Never your fault. Got it. But doesn't mean I didn't like him. I just understood who he was.
Yep.
Final question before we let you go. The Las Vegas Raiders come to town next week. They're sitting there at 2-0. Derek Carr put up 34 against the Saints last night. Is this a better football team than you expected going into the season?
No, it's about what I expected, to be honest with you. You could see them building. You could see them starting to put together a little bit of talent. Waller tied in. You know, Derek Carr, Jacobs, the running back, drafted Henry Ruggs, Renfro in the slot. You could see him grab Nelson Aguilar. You could see him, you know, start to maybe put some stuff together. Trayvon Mullen on the outside at the corner position. You started to say, okay, this team could potentially be good. Rob Marinelli comes over as a defensive line coach from the Dallas Cowboys, who's former head coach of Detroit, former defensive line coach of us in our Super Bowl winning ways in Tampa. So you kind of knew, okay, Tom Cable, pretty good offensive line coach. You know, you kind of said, okay, they're going to sneakily challenge the Kansas City Chiefs within that division. Sneaky.
Keyshawn, we always appreciate the time. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you again next week.
Okay, buds.
Thanks, Keyshawn. Keyshawn Johnson, who...
We're buds.
We're buds now.
We are buds now.
Okay. Yeah, I'm your bud. That's fine.
Makes all of us feel so good about ourselves.
Yeah, I do.
He did have to kind of get up into Drew Bledsoe's grill.
I love it. Yeah, he wasn't going to blame Keyshawn again after that.
No.
Yeah, because I was just looking at some of the quarterbacks that Keyshawn played with in his career. And
there was a lot of them.
It was really spread out. Like, the Vinny Testaverde and he connected on 13 touchdowns, and that was the most from any quarterback. And then you have guys like Brad Johnson, Sean King, Neil O'Donnell, Glenn Foley, Bledsoe, Ray Lucas, Jake Delhomme, Frank Reich, Rick Meyer, Rob Johnson, and Tom Tupa.
Glenn Foley.
That is quite
blast
a
from
list
the BC past.
That really is. That is quite a list of quarterbacks that he played with.
He is he's an imposing figure, Keyshawn. Like, he's not just physically, though. Like, he has a little bit of a...
He's got a presence?
Yeah, a little swag, a little aura, like a don't mess with me. You know,
well, like,
what was
Wiggy,
his book? Just throw me the damn ball. Like, that is the epitome of him.
Well, like Wiggy said, one of the only guys when Wiggy was there the short time with the Jets that would give it back to Parcells. Nobody was doing that then. Nobody was, you know, talking back to
At
Parcells.
At least not live to tell the tale.
But Keyshawn was, and to the point where he took him to Dallas with him.
Yeah, he told that story. He said, like, you can play for me any day after he came back at him. So one of those proving things, like a little bit of a prison moment he proved. Himself to Parcells.
That's right.
It is a Tuesday edition of a Patriots Monday with the travel schedule obviously coming home from Seattle. Joining us on the Harbor One Hotline is Patriots defensive tackle Lawrence Guy. Lawrence is brought to you by JB Sash and Door, your local Anderson window dealers. Our interview with Lawrence Guy is also brought to you by Verizon Wireless. Good morning, Lawrence. How are you?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
Doing great, thank you. Is there a more frustrating quarterback to play against than Russell Wilson? I mean, every time you think you've got him in your sights, you don't have him in your sights anymore.
You know, he's a good quarterback. He's good at what he does. You say you get frustrated, but you understand who you're playing against. You know he's going to make plays. You know he's going to be mobile. And we understand we had to do a certain job. And sometimes you capitalize on it, sometimes you don't. And looks like, you know, the outcome of the game, we did the best we could. We played every down the hardest as we can, and we take it as it is. And I feel like that's a learning experience of you have to grow on it. You know, you can't put your head down and be like, hey, man, we can't do this. No, you always figure out what you can do better from the game. You always figure out what you can do better from a play, and you can keep sharpening that iron.
Lawrence, it's only been a couple of games, but what's been the adjustments from going from Hightower and Van Noy and Collins, you know, experienced linebackers to sort of a new wave of younger guys behind you?
Well, as you say, you know, it's an adjustment for overall for everybody. We didn't have those OTAs. We didn't have those preseasons. You're going to keep hearing that from a lot of people saying the same thing, but I understand that. Gain speed, get education, help you out. And we're all taking it practice by practice, and we're coming into the game, and we're continuing to grow as a unit. And you're seeing that. And every year we're going to have players come in and players go due to different reasons, you know. But we're growing out as a team, growing out as a unit. Education gets better every single day. And again, we continue to play together, we continue to grow together. And that's all we should truly be hopeful.
In turn,
sharpen that iron and
Yeah, I can't hear him at
all. Yeah,
I can't. Sorry, Lawrence, we can't hear you. The tough phone connection.
Oops, I was going to put him on hold there, but I think he dropped off anyway.
Sean, get a hold of him there.
Blew him up.
Clear that up. Clean that up a little bit.
I mean, we tried.
We did. And he tried. It's not a Lawrence thing.
It's not a lack of
He's talking.
Trying.
He's answering. He's not got an effort in the answer. It's
technology.
Just doesn't keep up with us.
You were thinking 2020. But
let's go 5G.
What do I know? Yeah.
Let's try again. Let's see. Lawrence, unfortunately, you were cutting in and out there. We just couldn't hear you for a minute.
This is Sprint, you know. Verizon by Sprint, you know. T-Mobile by Sprint would be a game changer, but I'm about to switch my carrier.
Yeah, you are not doing them any favors.
You are probably not getting a deal with that group, I'm just saying.
Lauren,
I'm looking at me like, hey, what are you telling me? You're killing my company.
Go ahead, Andy.
Lawrence, as you guys turn the page here, I'm just wondering where you feel you guys are as a run defense. I think Seattle had some success on the ground, and obviously, looking ahead to the Raiders, Josh Jacobs is a good young running back. They're going to give it to him 20 times. That's the challenge you guys face.
We know we didn't accomplish what I wanted to accomplish on Sunday in the run game. We understand that. You know, me being in front of the line, that's a challenge on me to get better from what we need to see from this previous game and continue to grow. We understand that the team that was about to face is only a good, hard team. Saw that, yes, last night, you know. They're able to move the ball. They throw the ball. So one of those things that we have to continue to grow and continue to fix what we need. And the main goal is for me, like for me, the main goal for me is to stop the run. I'm a runner, center, and I understand that. Yeah. Hey, we got to make sure we eliminate the big plays. We got to make sure we eliminate how much running they do, and try to come to the yardage on that. But it's just playing good pounds to the man.
Lawrence, I'm just going to say this now. I'm going to say this now. We thanks, love Lawrence. You. We hate your phone.
Yes.
And sorry, unfortunately, Lawrence. We just cannot hear what you're saying today.
Sorry you fell in the pool while doing that interview.
Do they make him go in like the laundry room when he's doing these
the
things?
Saline does chamber or whatever they have down there?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
He's such a nice guy.
Great guy.
He's fun to talk to.
Love Lawrence.
When you can hear him.
Right.
And it's just one today, of those things.
Today he was the teacher on Charlie Brown.
Wanted to get his thoughts on the Mandalorian trailer. I guess that'll have to wait for another time.
I wanted to get his thoughts on the Mandalorian.
Oh, yeah, because you're watching season one now. Right now.
Yeah.
I'm in. He'd help you out with
and
that.
You have the Camdalorian with the little Bill Belichick baby.
Camdalorian looking good. Yeah, they should have gone Edelman there, I think.
Yeah, it's a little weird. But Bill is like the brains of the operation.
He is the brains.
The force is with Bill.
True.
So yeah, force, I guess it kind of makes sense. Yeah. Look at me dorking it out.
Look at that. Nice.
Was it Bleacher Report or Gridiron, somebody who put that Camdalorian?
Yeah, they did the Camdalorian
thing.
It
looked really good.
Yeah. But I saw somewhere where Wiggy's taking credit. He had it first.
Oh,
yeah, he mentioned it.
This is the way.
This is the way.
Like earlier this month, he said the Camdalorian.
I have spoken.
And I'm going to start finishing any of my thoughts like that. I have spoken. Means I'm done. I'm going to go to the bathroom. Right, I'll be back
here
in a little bit.
We're here until 2.
Oh, I got to keep speaking?
You say that at 1:59, you can say that. How's that sound?
617-779-7937. It's the telephone number. Text line is 37937. We'll get to the calls with you guys in just a few minutes. We've got Kiefer Madness coming up at 12:30 today. It's Dale and Keefe with Andy Hart, and it's time to trend.
Andy Hart is with Dale and Keefe every Tuesday and Thursday on WEEI.
Is it really a game plan from week to week? Depending on the opponent and, you know, what you can exploit with that opponent.
I think, Glenn, it always comes down to that for us. You know, we're going to try to take advantage of our opportunities and our matchups, and Josh and the offensive staff, you know, always do a good job of that. You know, we talk about trying to, you know, attack opponents' weaknesses and at the same time try to play to our strengths as much as we can. But if we feel like we can gain an advantage, then we'll try to do that. If we don't, then hopefully we can find something else that we can gain an advantage with.
Oh, that's hilarious.
That was Bill Belichick yesterday on OMF. Be careful now, boys. On OMF yesterday. And Tommy Curran, who will be with us tomorrow, as he is every Wednesday, has an interesting piece on NBC Sports Boston. The opening paragraph says, 2 games into the 2020 season, you can already take this to the bank about the Patriots. They are way, way, way ahead of schedule. Didn't we all think they were going to be 1-1 after 2 games this year?
Yeah, yes. But not looking this way, Dale.
Right.
I think that was the big thing is that, and I brought this up yesterday, Andy, I don't know if you agree with it, the scale, like you mentioned before about predictions for the season, were probably, I would say anywhere from 6-10 to 10-6. But everybody, if you did the ridiculous win-loss exercise, everybody would have had them 1-1 after 2. But you feel so much better if you're in the 10-win category than the 6-win category based on how it's looked.
I would also use a phrase that Jed Fish used last week about toolbox. How many tools you got in your toolbox?
Yeah.
They pulled out a couple impressive tools over the last 2 weeks. They won to victory. They ran the ball 40 times. We can control the game. We play from in front. It's all on our terms. And then this week, they threw the ball 40 times, 400 yards.
Yeah,
they had to play catch up. They did it in different ways. And I think that's probably sort of the idea there is that's ahead of schedule. I wrote a column that last week, the next test for Cam Newton, can he literally pass the test? Can he throw the ball all over the field?
Yep.
And
he
had to do that. He did that. Now, you could still lose games. They could have a letdown this week. I actually think there's a good chance for a letdown.
Good. Yeah, Raiders are good.
Now, the Raiders have the issue of they played Monday night, cross-country, yeah. 1 o'clock
game.
1 o'clock game. That's a tough spot for them. But I think the Patriots, this is an old Parcellian trap game or letdown game where you went to Seattle and we fought the good fight and everybody's now
on
our...
See, I go the other way. If Cam Newton scores on the last play of the game,
then it's a letdown.
Almost more likely of a right. loss to the Raiders. But now it's like you're motivated because as good as you played, you're still 1-1. And, you know, you're looking up at the Buffalo Bills in the division and all
right.
that stuff.
So I think the issue of being ahead of the curve, like, did you think after 2 weeks that you'd say they have an offense that can throw for 397, Julian Edelman's going to have a .150 receiving, Bird and Harry will each have 72 yards
no.
a pop, like, James White's out and you still have a good passing attack?
Yeah,
and
no,
by the way,
not.
In a weird way, that may have helped the spread of the offense because I do think in that last situation, the end of game situation, you might have a tendency to go White, Edelman, Edelman, White. Oh, no White's here. Maybe I have to go to Harry.
A little
maybe
more the
it
other
helps
guys.
You
sure.
differentiate.
Yeah.
A little like
See,
what.
I think that they're better offensively probably than we expected, a little bit ahead. I think they're worse defensively and a little bit behind. Now, we knew they'd be great in the secondary, but their defense right now looks worse than I thought it was.
Yeah, because it wasn't a great game for the secondary, and that is the strength of your
right.
team. And the linebacking group is just, it's not their fault. It's like getting mad at the Red Sox bullpen last season. It's like,
right.
it's not their fault. They're just not very good. So you're going to go crazy about Heath Hembree blowing a game? It's like, well, he's not very good. So right now, that's what you're dealing with the linebackers. Now, the good thing is, with the exception of Patrick Mahomes, and I guess Deshaun Watson later, but his team around him is not as good, you're not going to face a Russell Wilson every single week.
Right.
So Derek Carr, who had a nice game yesterday, is not as good and won't be able to make some of those same throws that Wilson made that beat actually pretty good defense at times.
So these numbers come courtesy of Chad Finn of the Boston Globe a few minutes ago on Twitter, and I ask this for a specific reason. Last year, the Patriots were on Sunday Night Football three times. Their ratings were 35.1, 35.5, 34.0. This Sunday night, big matchup, Seattle Seahawks, Sunday Night Football, they do a 29.2. By Patriots, Sunday Night Football standards, bleh. They were the third market in the country. Seattle was first, Providence was second, Boston was third. But are the fans of this area catching on to what they're seeing here, or is it just, who cares?
Well, I think...
No, I think they care very much.
Yeah, I mean, this is... I've been saying this since May. I got into an argument with Mutt about it. I've told you guys, I think there's a portion of the casual sports fan that isn't returning. And that includes the Patriots. That includes every team where you have this group of people that would have tuned in who are now watching other things, doing other things. They, you know, I've used the example for, you know, like daytime games. I'm going for a hike. I'm going for whatever the bike you bought during the pandemic, the other things
so
you've added.
I don't. Because some people want to take the victory lap, and they're like, "Oh, it's because you know some of the players kneel for the anthem and all that stuff."
I don't think
that's it. I think we've looked at numbers in the past, and we talked about election years where more people are maybe a little bit more interested in the news that night, or what's going on in the real world, and they focus their attention there. We're also in a pandemic, so some people are going to be just getting the latest information on that. And the NFL never goes up against the Western Conference Finals of the NBA like it did. Lakers and Nuggets played on Sunday. So there's just other things to
right.
do. Like that's normally it's just football season and some of the, you know, the end of season baseball games, which really for, you know, most markets don't matter at that point. You're just gearing up for the playoffs. So no, it's still a pretty good number. It's not
it's
like
a
put up
number.
A six.
And if all the things we're discussing, yeah. pandemic, election, Black Lives Matter, you know, new hobbies, diversification of interest, if they all bring, you know,
that's gonna chip away.
Yeah, it's all a little piece of the pie of why you could have lost 5 million people,
yeah.
or I mean
so,
5 rating points.
Right, right, right.
So yesterday, Keith had an early High Noon hot take, which was that he thinks, and he looked at what part of the Patriots team needed the most help, and he kind of reversed what everybody thought. We thought, well, you got to get weapons for Cam Newton, the wide receivers stink, the tight ends stink. And Keith thought, nope, they got to get help on defense. Hart, how do you respond to that?
I would agree that they need help on defense. You know, you said you're surprised where the defense is right now. I'm not. I mean, I think I used the phrase sneaky bad to describe this defense heading into the season.
They just
lost so many guys. So the talent goes down and the competition you're facing goes up. To me, that's an easy equation to solve. Right. You're going to be not as good. That doesn't mean you stink. It just means the numbers, the performances, the production is going to look different. And I thought a lot of people were just whistling past the graveyard. Oh, they'll be fine. They got the defensive player of the year. You seen that secondary? Who's going to throw on that secondary? Right. Russell Wilson and the Seattle Seahawks. We have the answer.
Mahomes will as well.
Right. Mahomes will. And you know what? There'll be some others.
Derek Carr might.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, it
wouldn't surprise me. So
I think Darren Waller could absolutely kill him.
It wouldn't stun me if Hunter Renfrow has a good game.
Yeah.
Like
Josh Jacobs could run on him.
Yes.
There's
certainly... You know, there's some reason to question that.
But is that so? So the Greg Hill Show asked Cam Newton, like, are you happy with your receivers? Basically paraphrasing, and he said, well, the answers are in the locker room. Do you think Bill feels that way about the linebackers and the defense overall? That like, yeah, we have it here. It's not there yet, but at least these are the guys. Or is he really thinking we got to acquire somebody?
Well, I think some of it he probably feels is there. Like Bo Allen should eventually be part of the team. I think that will help the run defense. I don't know how much. I'm not saying he's the be-all, end-all answer that you acquired some, you know, Ted Washington run stuffer that's now the centerpiece. And I think he probably has some faith that, A, Josh Uche will be active at some point, and Anfernee Jennings might show up at some point, that you'll get some contributions. I don't think he's as, you know, giddy as Greg Bedard is, but I think he probably feels like...
Oh, about Duggar?
And even Adrian Phillips, like, as they get more comfortable...
Yeah, he's been a little better than I thought.
Adrian Phillips was a big talking point in the Chargers game. They were talking about how much the Chargers liked Phillips and miss him and what he's now doing
in New
England.
He's better than I thought,
for sure. So I think some of the answers are probably there. I still think they're probably undermanned. Like, you can't tell me how good Dante Hightower, Kyle Van Noy, and Jamie Collins are, and then just be like, we'll replace them. So like, I think they're good. You can't just replace them.
But it's like, how much worse are they from the defense week 8 versus how much are they worse from the defense week 17 in the playoffs? Because at that point, I don't think they were as good. Like, we saw Ryan Fitzpatrick move the ball right down the field.
Yeah.
Like, are they... They're worse, though,
because guess what that defense had?
No, they are worse.
Hightower and Collins and Van Noy.
But
the
production is different. Collins wasn't as good at the end of the year. Patrick Chung wasn't as good at the end of the year.
They weren't bullying the bad guys.
Was Van Noy ever really that good?
He really wasn't.
He was good.
Thank you.
He really wasn't.
No, he was good.
Compared to Uche, did you see him get run over by Josh Allen? Josh Allen stole his soul
yesterday. Take a play and decide that's what his career is.
If I'm going to criticize Bedard for shutting the tape off after a whole game, it sounds like you shut the tape off after a singular play.
After that play.
No, but Van Noy is a Belichick creation. Van Noy sucked before he was here, and he sucks now. He was good here. No, he was good here.
And you could see it on the All 22.
Thanks.
I think you're being there's three defenses to consider.
Okay.
There's the talent that bullied overwhelmed opponents early last year. Just bullied the hell out of them, right?
But they only bullied...
The same talent was on the field and wasn't as good over the second half because the talent could punch back.
Well, right, because, they bullied inferior opponents.
Right.
Yeah, the
talent didn't change.
Yeah.
The talent changed significantly.
On the other side.
No. I was going to say,
all of a sudden, Lamar Jackson is a little bit different.
But the talent also changed significantly in the offseason from that defense. You thought 100%. Of the group that played the Dolphins and played the Titans and fell on their face and petered out as the season went on, this team is not as good. And just the regression. I talk about Shime's boy, Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
Regression.
Yeah.
We'll see if that regression comes. But this defensive player of the year, Stephon Gilmore, unless you're Darrell Revis in that little...
Gilmore won't be better.
It just happens. There's always a corner that has a great year. He almost never has as great a year the next year.
It's one thing I disagree with Keyshawn on, and I guess Keyshawn was maybe talking more about it with the teams that he was specifically on, saying, hey, we wouldn't not target Deion Sanders. We would do what we wanted to do.
Right.
We've seen plenty of teams. Remember the year that Aaron Rodgers played Seattle and didn't throw to Richard Sherman's side of the field for an entire game? The whole game plan was for one side. So that was when Richard Sherman was at his best. When Revis was at his best, nobody bothered throwing over there because it was a mess. You're like, oh, it's literally Revis Island. Game two, you have DK Metcalf in his second season and the Seahawks saying, yep, that we have an advantage there over Gilmore.
He chokeslammed him on the sideline. He was like, there was no fear there. There was
none.
No respect.
He was getting open on
There was no deferential treatment.
Yeah.
Well, that guy's the defensive player of the year, so maybe let's just see what we can do.
Like, don't get me wrong. I still love Gilmore, but it's not, you don't have the Revis in his prime Champ Bailey in his prime feel.
I would also say that, you know, I had my Demir Byrd stat of the week.
Yeah, what do you got now?
Three of the last four games, Gilmore hasn't played great.
That's a good point.
Right? I mean, three. Yeah.
Devontae Parker.
Yep. He then again on opening day, he had a couple penalties and wasn't great. And by the way, this game he lost.
And week one could have potentially been worse. Parker, when did he go down? He left the game and never came back.
Right.
It was the second quarter, maybe?
I mean, that regression it started late last year. Some people thought he was going to lose the Defensive Player of the Year award because of the Parker game.
Yeah.
But the last three of his four games, you'd say he's not a dominant player.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. Lou's down on the Cape. Hey, Lou, how you doing?
Hey, outstanding. How's it going, guys?
Good.
What's going on?
I just wanted to give you my personal opinion on why I think the numbers are down, according to my group of friends. Football is an event where we just don't wake up in the morning and turn the game on. Like, speaking specifically about ourselves, me and my buddies, we like to wake up. We go and have breakfast about 8, 9 o'clock in the morning. We go to stores and, you know, buy everything we need for the game. We go buy squares at our local restaurants or local bars. And then we alternate between which games, between people's homes. Our wives don't want us bringing in friends anymore. Our breakfast place is closed down. We can only have takeout. You go to the grocery store, there's lines. And if you go too early, it's for the older people of our population. And so it's the whole atmosphere change. It's nothing to do with Black Lives Matter or anything. That's just my opinion. Thanks, guys.
All right, thanks, Lou. Yeah, I mean, everybody's got a different
Everything
reason.
Is different.
Things
sure.
are for sure different. You know, you're not supposed to be having the big group gatherings anymore. Although you could then argue that more people are watching the games at home and less... Right.
Should be more TVs split up. Like everybody's watching on their TV. The rating should actually go up.
Yeah, that's why I think there's not one reason. There's probably like Lou's got his reason. And somebody else will call in and say, well, this is why I'm not watching, or this is why I'm watching less. And you're like, okay. But it's still overall a monster number. And as we say, every other sport, every other program
would
kill
die for
to
it.
Have
yes.
what the football ratings are.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. Kiefer Madness coming up at 12:30. It's Dale and Keefe with Andy Hart, Sports Radio WEEI.
Back to Dale and Keefe with Andy Hart on WEEI.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. Text line is 37937. Were you guys surprised with waking up to the news this morning, as we all did, that it appears that there will be no charges pursued against Patriots owner Robert Kraft, and the entire spa situation in South Florida will now disappear?
Because that story disappeared for a long time. You know, it was such a monster story. I remember, Dale, we were on the air when it first came out, and I was like, is this right? When, like, we were looking at, like, TMZ had the first report, and I'm just scrolling through Twitter, and I was like, I think we have breaking news. And then we had to discuss it for a while, and then it went away. And
well, then when the words human trafficking were attached to it, oh, my God.
At first, you're getting all these different bits of information and trying to piece it all together. And then for a while, it looked like the video was going to be released. And you're like, what? And you're like, and then it kind of went away. He hired like all of Epstein's lawyers and got all the biggest lawyers ever, and hadn't really heard much about it in a long time. So, no, I wasn't really surprised when I heard the news this morning.
According to our buddy Michael McCann, reading his legal take on it, it appears that what did this whole case in was that the police who were running the surveillance video, they have a legal obligation. When there is perfectly legal activity going on, they're supposed to turn off the cameras. And they didn't.
Yeah. So
and apparently that was what did the whole thing. Now, some people will say, well, he got off. That's a bad
Dale.
Joke.
That's, Dale.
You know, I'm
Working
sorry already.
Dale, come
what is
on.
Wrong with you?
Come on, Dale. Be better. All right. So he will escape legal jeopardy because of a loophole, a technicality, which may actually be true, but it's also a fact.
I also wonder, though, like, if it was me, I'm like, so who has this tape? Where is this tape? What are
well,
we
that's
doing
the
with
other part of this. Now, he has filed some sort of legal paperwork. He wants the tape destroyed. And when we saw this on the news this morning, my wife turned to me. She said, you think people don't have copies of this already?
Right. And it's not even tape anymore. It's probably a digital file that has bounced around. Yeah. And who knows where
it's on the dark web right now.
The dark web.
It's on there right now.
And that's not right.
It can stay there as far as I'm concerned. Got no desire to see this at all.
I don't either. I was just asking.
If you want the power move of all power moves,
what?
You just release it.
You yourself
release it.
If you're Robert Kraft,
Kardashian
here it is,
style.
Everybody.
Play it on the big screen at Gillette Stadium.
Get your own reality show. Yeah, no, you could spin this off into a new reality career on E!
Yeah, look how Paris Hilton benefited from it. Kim Kardashian benefited from it.
Oh, there is no Kardashian without
any
it.
Male examples. Do we have male examples of guys that...
What's
his name? Sean Penn. Didn't he have one way back in the day?
I mean,
Ray J?
Was it Rob Lowe had one? I believe she was underage. I believe... Wasn't Rob Lowe?
Yeah, Rob Lowe was like underage too, wasn't it?
He just said that.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. You imagine?
Justin Verlander.
You imagine chiming in like that
when
quickly after not listening?
Justin Verlander.
How did you hear the name I mentioned
released?
And not the immediate follow-up? What are you screaming about back there?
I said Justin Verlander and Kate Upton had pictures released, not a video.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I haven't seen them, but I believe you.
Yeah, they definitely didn't release them on their own.
Right.
That was a hack.
Yeah, you always blame. Well, there was for a while there. Remember the whole Sony hack?
Yeah.
Like everybody ever, business with Sony, all their information was out there and
emails and internal memos.
The worst, and then like there was the email that Channing Tatum sent, which basically just made him sound like the coolest guy in the world. He's like, let's go film this movie. Let's go, everybody. Great job. And they're like, it's like all like nude pictures and then like a fun email from Channing Tatum.
And some,
what is this?
You know, I know you were semi-joking, Rich, about just taking the bull by the horns and release, but there have definitely been women who have done that. Like, they find out their phone was hacked or that there's, like, somebody threatening them with photos, like, topless photos.
Yeah,
and
Bella
just, like, here they are.
Bella Thorne did that. She's the one we brought up before because she was getting in all the hot water with the OnlyFans. But prior to this, somebody was actually blackmailing her. It was like, I have these photos, and if you don't pay me, I'm going to release them. She's like, all right, I'll release them.
Right.
They're like, oh, whoops.
Chris now Evans really kind of leaned into releasing his Captain America picture.
Now that I've got your attention, he tweeted out afterwards.
He sure did. Got everybody's attention there.
I mean, if you're proud, you're proud.
I would be too.
Calm down, Chime.
Yeah, relax. Don't take it too far.
Nobody wants
you crossed
to see
the line. You got weird.
too what? Much. I'd be too proud much. If I played Captain America.
We're having a nice conversation.
Yeah, you took it in a weird place.
Is that what it was? Yeah, well.
Weirdo.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. We've got Kiefer Madness at 12:30. Many people don't get a chance because of work schedules and things like that to hear all of the Greg Hill Show in the morning. We're going to bring back some of the Cam Newton interview at about 1 o'clock today because it was really good.
It's great.
Phenomenal. I mean, you have a Hall of Fame for bad phones. If there's a Hall of Fame for quarterback interviews on this station, I think that is a top five representation. And I feel like, based on the first couple weeks and what we have moving forward,
we're in store for a pretty good season. Yeah.
Strap in, enjoy the ride, because this is going to be one good season of interviews.
Rich, will there be any call to HR before this show is over? Because I see Hart is swinging a bat across the table from you here, and apparently,
well, that's so we can keep a 6 foot distance.
Threatening.
That's all that is.
Is that what that is?
I'm in my own personal space. HR
violation. It's Dale and Keefe with Andy Hart. You can't spell Hart without H and R here on Sports Radio WEEI.